Robert Gallucci has spent over two decades as an American diplomat and international public servant. He was deputy director of the United Nations team, which oversaw the disarmament of Iraq after the first Gulf War. During the Clinton administration, he helped negotiate the deal which ended, for a time, North Korea's nuclear program. He's now dean of the Georgetown University School of Foreign Service. I spoke with Dean Gallucci about the future of U.S. national security. He begins by contrasting the recent changes in America's relationship with those two countries he knows so well, North Korea and Iraq.
The North Korean case is one in which we have had, and this is extremely important, recent successful experience in a negotiation. I rather think lots of people see the news of a secret uranium enrichment program in North Korea as evidence of failure. I would say, au contraire, what we have in the North Korean case is a negotiation in 1994 that was aimed at stopping a particular program. It's called gas graphite reactors and a reprocessing facility that would, we estimated, the CIA estimated, in the mid-90s be producing roughly 150 kilograms of plutonium, separated plutonium, by the year 2000. That program was stopped cold in 1994 and verified as such. There are other provisions the North Koreans agreed to, which for which we knew we had no inspection, but it was better to have them sign up to this. We did not negotiate inspection provisions, and we said at the time we did a negotiation, part of this arrangement we can monitor, part of it we can't. And there's no trust here. There's nothing about the agreement that depends on us hoping the North Koreans will behave themselves. With respect to what they could do that we weren't verifying, we said we'd have to monitor them just like we'd have to monitor them if we had no agreement on the plutonium side. So the plutonium program has been crushed, not terribly surprisingly, the North Koreans, for whatever reason, insurance, in perhaps against a failure of the program, of the framework, perhaps in order to have something else to sell as they sold the plutonium program, developed a intendedly secret uranium enrichment program, which the Clinton administration discovered and intended to deal with in negotiations that were beginning just at the end of the Clinton administration. So there's a different situation. There's the prospect of negotiating with North Korea, which really doesn't exist with Iraq. So it's a different situation. Would not expect the same policy in both cases. And with respect to this, the policy of preventive war with North Korea, I'd have to note that in 1994, one of the reasons I think we got an agreement was that President Clinton not only intended to use force if necessary to stop this program, but it became known to the North Koreans that he would. And that tends to focus the mind of negotiators.
I recently heard you speak about the difference between defense of the United States by deterrence and defense by denial. Can you summarize the difference between those two schools of thought?
One way of securing your nation's safety is to build a capability that denies an enemy the possibility of reaching your territory. And that was a traditional way of achieving defense objectives. Before there was air power, it was really quite plausible. Air power made it lots more difficult to reach your security objectives by denial. And then when there were missiles, ballistic missiles, it became virtually impossible. And so concepts of deterrence were developed. We knew about deterrence before, but it was always a less desirable way of achieving your security because you essentially, in a deterrent threat, you promised a potential enemy that if they struck you and hurt you, you would strike them back and hurt them so badly they would regret having struck you in the first place. That's deterrence. It is retaliation. The problem with deterrence, of course, is that you get struck first. As another problem with deterrence is not only that you have to absorb the hit, but that it depends not only on your capacity to strike back, but on the other side believing that you will. What we have now is a unique situation where we certainly don't have defense by denial. We had, for a long time, for 50 years, relied upon deterrence against big states. The problem now is we confront an enemy that is not always a state. It may be a terrorist group like Al-Qaeda, and when it is, we not only lack the defense, but we may well lack any possibility of deterrence. We may not know who struck us. We may not know from where they struck us. And even if we know who and where, we may not be able to threaten them with retaliation because they may not care.
Well, if we don't have either of those things, what's keeping us all from running screaming into the night about the fact that we have no defense?
I think it is the faith that we have a government that has substantial resources and has been deploying them as effectively as it knows how to deal with the threats it can identify before they manifest themselves with attacks on the United States. I put it this way because there's always a question about how effective the government is at this, and there was some enthusiasm after the 11th of September to put blame on somebody for not having adequately defended this country. Maybe there are those who should have done more than they did, but the people in the last administration and this administration are quite focused on their responsibility to defend the nation, and they're trying to do that. That rather extraordinary deployment of our forces to Afghanistan very quickly after 9/11 to go to what we believed was the heart of al-Qaeda in order to disrupt it was a manifestation of that kind of mobility and strength. However, over time, this kind of enemy requires the continued, durable application of force and a political conceptualization of the problem that allows us to get and keep support. So the administration, if it wants to go to the heart of this problem, is going to have to stick with it, and I suspect the next few administrations will as well.
Any specific recommendations of things that the administration should be doing or that the American people should be looking for to implement this?
The principal threat to the security of the United States of America doesn't come from Iraq or from North Korea or from any rogue state right now acting directly against the United States. We can defend against some of those threats and we can deter others. The threat comes from a group like al-Qaeda, a terrorist group that has a sort of an amorphous location, real resources at its disposal, and certainly a commitment to do grievous harm to the United States and probably other Western interests. The question really for the administration is, in everything it does in the security area, how does that impact the principal objective it must have, which is to deal with the terrorist threat.
Dean Gallucci, I have one last question I want to ask you. In your position at Georgetown, you are in a unique spot to see how this country is preparing future generations to deal with the threats that you've talked about. Are we doing the right things? Do you think that 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, we will look back and say, yes, we did a good job at training these young people to face those threats of the future?
If we fail at that, it will not be because we haven't tried to succeed. We have at Georgetown in the school a special graduate program specifically devoted to security studies. We have a Center for Peace and Security Studies. We have just wonderful undergraduate and graduate students in the school. Many of them go into government service, either in the State Department, Defense Department, the intelligence community, as well as into the private sector. We work on our curriculum to try to make it as relevant and as substantial as possible, to preparing students in language and in culture, as well as in the more technical sides of security. So I think we're working at this pretty hard, and we have wonderful material.
Do you think there's another future president or secretary of state somewhere in your student body right now?
I'm absolutely sure. The spirit I see in these students, lots of entrepreneurial spirit, lots of intelligence, incredible amounts of energy. What I can't remember is anybody like that when I was an undergraduate. I find these students absolutely knock your socks off wonderful.
Robert Gallucci is dean of the Georgetown University School of Foreign Service.